Once more unto the breach, dear friends.
Else fill up the wall with our English dead.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Hopefully. I mean, it'd be nice to get some boys and girls interested in this stuff. Welcome to another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jake and...
Jeff.
McClure. And we are here to... hopefully educate and enlighten you in the world of finance and economics. Maybe give you some pointers on what you should be looking at in your private planning for your future, as well as giving you an idea of maybe what's happening in the big wide world out there. But before we get started on any of that stuff, this is our preferred economic term, by the way, stuff. We've got some disclosures to say. Would you like to start us off?
Oh, I get to start the disclosures?
Yeah, you are given pride of place. You're top billing.
Well, first off, the Personal Wealth Coach is not only the name of a riveting radio program, one you're listening to,
riveting,
our internet program.
By riveting, you mean like molten steel being lodged between two metals to hold them together?
You got it.
So there's exactly a lot of shrieking in the background as we speak. Just keep that in mind.
It is also the name of a registered investment advisory firm based in Salado, Texas, registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission, which does not imply in any way that the United States Securities and Exchange Commission approve of what we're doing. It just that's who our regulator is, because we have more than $100 million under management. But this show, this program, is not investment advice. We don't give investment advice on the radio. We give investment advice personally to our clients. And what we do on this radio program is we provide educational information.
What? We
try to educate people.
But see, if I give you a disclosure to do in the future, you just try to hog them all. You took like three disclosures out of one.
Hog them all?
Hog them all.
Hog them all?
Hog them all.
Hog them all.
We don't pay for this radio program. We're not paid to do the radio program. How's that? We do... as a firm, advertise for the radio program on the radio channel. How's that? But we don't pay for it. And they do at least as much advertising for the program as we do.
That's good.
So there is no quid pro quo, Senator. There might be a quo, but probably not.
No, there's actually no quid quo.
Oh, now I messed you up in Latin. Quid pro quo.
Quid pro pro. Crow. There's a crow in there.
Quid pro quo. There's no crow anymore. It's gone.
Quid
it flew away.
Crow?
Yeah. Quid, like monetary payment, quid. Like
yeah.
A quid in Britain. Pro, mm-hmm. Like going
professional
or doing forward things. Quo, for return payment.
Mm.
So there was no payment for payment.
I get a boat
payment for service.
Quid pro quo. And then we'll be able to pronounce it.
Yeah.
I can also say that the information we present on this informational educational radio program has been obtained from sources we deem to be reliable, but we make no warranty or guarantee as to the accuracy or completeness of said information. How do you like that? By the way, that's the one I give every week because I love to say deem and warranty and guarantee.
In the same sentence. How often do any of our listeners get to say those three words in the same sentence?
Well, I get to say it once a week.
You probably say it more than once a week because you like it so much.
I do. I say it to myself. That's the chant I work on as I go to sleep at night.
I deem that to be a lovely mantra for you.
Mm, yes.
All right. So
and the other thing is there's something else.
One more thing.
Disclose.
Yeah. What's that?
Yes. We have emails, and if you would like to join with us today, presuming that today is Saturday, the 18th of December, 2021, you're certainly welcome to send us an email, and we will try to address it on the air, the telephone numbers. The email addresses are both jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com, preferably both of them. That's jake or jeff@tpwc.com.
Yeah. And then we'll try to talk about it. But before we get into questions from listeners, because we've already got some, we had a pre-listener. He was listening before he was even listening. But before we get to that, what happened this week? Can you give us an update on what moved the markets and whether or not the economy existed all week?
Right. We had a big thunderstorm last night.
Oh, yes. Very, very wet. You know, they caused the economy to be soggy.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
Well, the S&P 500 stock index, if you followed it all week, you got a lot of excitement. And if you didn't, then you didn't. I guess that's true. It seesawed up and down quite a lot. Matter of fact, it hit a record high of 47.27 on Thursday during the day. But it ended by the end of day Friday down 1.94% for the week at 46.20.64. And it really was a bear bull baiting week.
You started with some alliteration there. I was thinking we were going to be all B words. Bear
I couldn't
bull
think of a B word.
Baiting better breakfasts.
Right, something like that.
Something like that. Okay.
It seesawed back and forth. And oddly enough, when the Federal Reserve effectively announced and its members were giving speeches, and it was very clear they intended to raise interest rates by at least three times next year in 2022. Basically, they're going to tail off the stimulus, the money that they're pumping into the economy by buying bonds, and start raising interest rates, which normally in history, I've noticed, causes the market to go into a tailspin because, oh no, they're going to raise interest rates too much and things are going to be bad. Instead, the market went up on those days when those things came out. And then people started talking about, oh no, the economy is running too hot. There's inflation and the Fed is going to raise interest rates too fast and it's going to clamp down on the economy. It's going to shut the economy down. That caused the market to go down. And then it went back up when, again, the Federal Reserve folks were saying the economy is in really good shape. We're going to raise interest rates three times next year, and that's all. And everybody was really happy again. And then.
And then what?
And.
Well, you're breaking up. Hold on. And then say it. You've said and then twice, and then we lost you.
And then Ron.
You're being censored. We're getting and then. Can you move your phone up and down or something? Yeah, you're gone. You're gone. And then Omicron or Omicron. I keep saying Omicron like it's a transformer.
I think it's Omicron. Anyway.
It's Omicron. Yeah. You're not coming through. We're going to need to.
Weird.
Yeah. I'm going to mute the phone and you call me right back. Okay. So, yeah, he said, and then Omicron hit. And then what? Then we went from rapidly fluctuating marketplace to, wait, it didn't really change. It's still a rapidly fluctuating marketplace. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right, you're back, and it doesn't sound like you're being censored by the government anymore.
Well, anyway, the Omicron variant popped up, and cases tripled in a couple of days in New York and several other states, and Ohio and two other states, Maine and Florida, I think, have actually called out the National Guard because their hospitals are filling up and they're having to go to emergency systems to handle the new patients.
Can I add to that?
Sure.
During that time, so Thursday, ACDC had a panel on the vaccines. It was on all the headlines. It was about, I don't know if they were fighting with a Battle of the Band. Oh, no, wait, it's a CDC panel. Sorry, never mind. The CDC panel was recommending Moderna and Pfizer over Johnson & Johnson. It would have been a lot more fun if it was ACDC panel, but that's what it looked like on all the headlines, and I was really excited for a little bit. So now, yes, that was part of the fluctuations in the market. New variant and ACDC's entered the scene. Okay, go ahead.
Yes. So what we've got is an economy that's running quite strongly. We'll get into some other details on that later on. The Federal Reserve has said we're going to raise rates, but not by a whole lot. And we're taking this inflation seriously, which was amazingly good news to the market. And then the Omicron surge is coming much faster than I think most people anticipated, and it's hitting much harder than most people anticipated. And in the midst of that, out came a laboratory report that indicated that Omicron is just as impactful. In other words, the disease is not less strong than the Delta variant, which was something that was going around. So that's caused the market to dip a little bit at the end of the week. But the important thing here on the market, this is the big takeaway from the market. The worry factor in the market is very high. Very high. And as long as the worry factor is very high, historically, we have never had a major market crash in a bear market. We have major market crashes in huge bear markets. The worry factor goes away.
Yeah, the bull market goes away and becomes a bear market. Those major crashes occur when people aren't worried anymore. When you mean the term...
This will go on forever.
This will go on forever, or...
It's different this time.
Euphoria, over-enthusiastic. We're not seeing any of that out there right now.
We're seeing the opposite, which is very, very healthy. And there's some other indicators we go into later in the show, like buybacks. But the bottom line to it is this worry and this concern, and this dip we saw in the market this week, is we see this as very healthy and very good. It's interesting. The tech stocks that have been leading the market upward are the ones who took the hit this week.
Yeah.
And it's going anyway. So the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index, though, when we get done with all the dust flying and everything else, it's up 4% for the trailing 3 months, 23.02% year to date, and 24.57% from last year at this time, which is a lot by any definition.
Yes.
The CRSP Mid-Cap Value Index, which we also follow, it's kind of at the other end from the large cap growth stocks that drive the S&P 500. It dropped 1.42%. Interestingly enough, even though these are smaller stocks, and over the long term, they've had some excellent performance, they dropped less than the rest of the market. They dropped to 25.1468. They remain up 22.6% year to date. The 10-year U.S. Treasury note fell about 5% to 1.407%. Why is that important? Why is it important? Why do we follow that? If the people who invest literally billions of dollars a day in the U.S. Treasury market thought that we were going to have high inflation into the future, interest rates would be much higher. There's a lot of people and a lot of money and a lot of very sophisticated money that's really, really happy to get 1.4% return guaranteed for 10 years. That indicates that there's a lot of money out there that thinks inflation is not going to be that bad. That there's articles that came out in the Wall Street Journal and other places that people are concerned about the yield curve flattening. The yield curve is in great shape. It's not quite as steep as it was, but it's still plenty steep. The 10-year or the 30-year Treasury bond did slip to 1.814%, but there's a lot of difference between 1.4 and 1.8 in this particular situation, which indicates it's nice and steep, meaning that longer maturity Treasury bonds are paying more. West Texas Intermediate crude oil slipperiness
yes,
down to
oiliness even
went down to $70.13 a barrel, and that was again the COVID thing did that. The traders in oil, which is a greasy, slippery thing sort of trade, said that they see demand potentially falling because of travel shutdowns because of the Omicron COVID variant. So it looks very much like we've got another wave of this thing that's hitting. It is hitting hard where it already is on the East Coast, Northeast particularly. You might want to brace yourself. Yeah. It's probably going to come here, and it's probably going to fill up the hospitals again.
It's already in Austin. It's already in Dallas. So it's probably already everywhere in between. So it's really... This is the same thing they were saying about the Delta. This is going to be the thing that's out there in the wave. It's the one that's going to kind of push it. Giving it a different name for every mutation, it's still COVID, and it's still a nasty thing. So, one other thing. I don't think you've touched on this yet. The government's still open.
Well, that's news. That's not market.
That's the market, but it's a big thing that happened this week.
It's not a matter of the government being open. That would be
just not closed.
It's the fact that the government is going to continue to make its Social Security payments and pay its employees and things like that. The Congress, on a straight up Democratic vote in the Senate, passed an increase in the debt ceiling to $2.5 trillion, and that should carry us into 2023 before we start running out of money again. And by the way, to be bipartisan here and to be properly balanced, I want you to know that the Treasury Secretary said whether or not the Democrat bill that was earlier this year was passed, the spending bill, just based on the stimulus bills that were passed on a straight up Republican vote last year, we would have still run out of money on Thursday. And interestingly enough, the bill took long enough to get through that it got to the president's desk Thursday morning. Thursday was the day the Treasury was literally going to run out of money and stop paying Social Security employees, interest on saving on bonds. The United States was scheduled to default on Thursday, and the president signed the bill on Thursday. Folks, I'm going to be opinionated here just for a second and tell you that is silly.
Yeah.
That is absurd. To take, if in a business, the business ran itself down to where its finance committee refused to commit to allow it to pay its bills until the very day they were going to default.
But we can't make payroll if we don't get this done. Oh. Well, it's just not a very well-run business. That's what it sounds like to me. Wait a minute. We're talking about the government. Never mind. That's like an oxymoron for them to be well-run. It's still silly in my mind. But they're the folks we elected.
Well, we've not seen, back to the COVID things, we've not seen a big surge of cases in the United States. In the last week, we had 59,000 cases, but we've had more in past weeks. We're not really seeing the Omicron variant do here what it's been doing in other places. It is surging in the United Kingdom tremendously, and I think American exceptionalism is real, but I don't think when it comes to viruses, we have much exceptionalism. So what's going to happen? You just kind of buckle your seatbelts because we're going to see almost certainly a major surge in COVID, in hospitalizations, and in deaths. And it's not going to be pretty. By the way, I realize this could irritate some people. I'm sorry in advance if I irritate you, but I'm going to irritate you anyway.
Oh,
the people who are dying across the world, the people who are dying of this new variant of COVID are almost universally, I mean, almost totally, like 99.9% are people who are unvaccinated. So it's probably smart to get three shots.
And by probably, he means it's smart.
If you don't, then you're taking a significant risk of being dead. That's all I got to say about that.
Yeah. And that was a very nice Forrest Gump statement there. Nicely. That's all I have to say about that. All right. So we've got some questions that are hanging out there for us. Are you done with the market?
One. Oh, yeah. Sure. Well, the market. Market's done with me.
Oh, yeah. Our most loyal pre-listener and listener, John the Inquisitor, gave us a pre-program question, though it didn't have a picture of the Wall Street Journal. I don't know if this is the real deal. Is this really John? I'm not sure.
Well, the second one didn't have a picture either.
Maybe he's gone digital.
Mm.
Now he's just going to have to take pictures of his screen and send it to us. That'll work for us too. We'll be just as happy with that.
Cool.
And his question fits very nicely with what we were planning on talking about anyway, because it's the big news at the moment. Are there any asset classes that flourish under the inflationary period that we're seeing? Easy answer to that question is unknown.
The answer.
The tense of the question. Are there any asset classes that flourish during the inflationary period that we are seeing? That's
yes.
Like right now.
Yes.
And the answer is yes. But it's also true across...
Let's move on to the next question.
Oh, yeah, that was it. That was all. Yes.
You didn't want to know what they were.
And quick answer to that is it's not gold.
Right.
It's
Or Bitcoin.
Or Bitcoin. These have shown absolutely zero negative correlation long-term against the dollar. By negative correlation, I mean if one goes up, the other should be going down if they're good hedges. They're not. So, I mean, you can look at it over long periods of time, whenever you want. These stuff is all available online, but somehow the religion that gold is going to protect you from inflation still exists. And by religion, I mean, it's just pure faith without any evidence. I mean, you could have evidence in a religion at least. Anyway, that's on for something else. Inflation has had winners, and tongue-in-cheek aside, will actually tell you, based on history, every single time in the United States history, and even when you look prior to that into the stock exchanges of the Dutch and the United Kingdom, prior to us having exchanges, inflationary periods, the best hedge historically, before there were tips, before there were the savings bonds issued by the government, they said they're going to pay you extra inflation. The place that you would go to hide from inflation was owning companies that made profits. And if you think about that for a second, if there's inflation going on, then the companies are supposed to be raising their prices to stay profitable, to keep up with inflation. And that's what we've seen throughout history in the stock market is the equities, the ownership in businesses. It's one of the best asset classes to keep up with inflation. Now that has some big caveats. Number one, being extremely well diversified, because it's great to keep up with inflation, but if the risk of the company failure causes you to miss out on a 6% inflation, but instead lose 80% of your money, that's not a good idea. So governing the risk by diversifying it is important. And then staying in there for a long period of time once you've gotten it well diversified. So having said that, a well-diversified equity portfolio long-term historically has been really great against inflation. We have Treasury inflation-protected securities issued by the United States government at this point. Those are great. We talked last week about I-bonds, which are savings bonds, which for a limited time are offering rates that are in excess of inflation even now. So all of those require more research. All of those require you to look into it a bit more. But yeah, there's a lot of places that wind up being inflation winners consistently. There's also places that consistently tend to be losers when it comes to inflation. That's the bond market tends to not do so well in high inflationary periods because the interest rates don't change with inflation once you've already got the bond.
Well, we talked about Bitcoin there for just a moment and cryptocurrencies in general. To give you some idea, the inflation burst that we've seen towards the latter half of this year, in April, Bitcoin was about $83,000. It's now $46,000, which meant that if you bought Bitcoin thinking it was going to be like gold and was going to protect you against inflation, you're probably not real happy.
Well, yeah, but gold didn't either.
Yeah, but I think we've talked about gold a lot, but Bitcoin, frankly, at some point, I think Bitcoin is going to blow up.
Again.
And collapse.
And again. Maybe go away forever, but
if it were a stock market, it would be in a bear market right now. It's down 26% in the last month.
Now, this fits in nicely with something that seems like it doesn't fit in nicely at all. We've got another question from John.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
It's correction. 63,000 in April, not 83,000. 63,000 in April, and it's 46,957 right now.
What is?
Bitcoin. I said 83,000. I meant 63,000.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So the other question from John is about Russian interest rates. Are you interested in Russian interest?
Yes.
You have an interest in Russian interest?
I do.
Okay. Well,
it's an area I focus on.
As do I. Russia has raised its interest rates 7 times in 2021. What's going on over there? This is according to John. And he's correct. Things are on the rocks over there. And this is kind of a subject. We were talking about this before we went on the air. It's a subject that we both wanted to talk about. A series of economies in Eastern Europe and into Asia that are having serious difficulties in their economy. Turkey is by far the leader of the top 20 economies having the most difficulty right now. Russia's not far behind, though. Russia's raised interest rates 7 times because they have obscene inflation going, and they're going a different route to try to run it off. Turkey is lowering interest rates to stop inflation, which that's actually been tried a lot of times in history. And it's never worked, but maybe this time it will. Maybe this time is different. Probably not, though. When you,
it reminds me.
Go ahead.
It reminds me of that apocryphal quote from Einstein that insanity can be defined as doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
Right. Oh, though whether or not Einstein's the real person who said it, we don't know.
Well, it's not actually completely true because practicing the piano over and over again does produce different results.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, there's some benefit to doing things repeatedly, but if you're doing it exactly the same way that didn't work before,
right,
it's probably not going to have a different result. And so you have something to say. I want to kind of tie turkey and Russia together.
Well, you can finish tying up the turkey with Russia.
Okay. We're not getting greasy. We're not going to Greece yet. Turkey only, and then Russia. Okay. Maybe a little Belarus.
For seasoning.
Right. All right. So what's going on over there? Well, number one, Russia's had a heck of a time keeping COVID under control. And we occasionally take interns. We had an NBA intern last year that now is a much more permanent employee. But when he was first in the office in the middle of the pandemic and we were all masked up and far away and all that good stuff, I was showing him from an economics perspective how to find false data in the economy, how to find false data, period. And I used the official COVID testing numbers from Russia. One of the things that you can see across the board in every testing statistic everywhere is weekends. You can also see holidays. So Russia's not got that. It's just got these smooth lines of no infections suddenly followed by, oh, we're going to revise that and show that we have some so the people don't think we're lying to them. Their economy is much more controlled than it used to be. And because of that, the people have less faith in it, which causes more inflation. What's happening in Turkey is the same situation, only compounded, in that the head of state, Erdogan, has taken a lot of control in Turkey, has really squeezed on a whole series of areas, including the central bank. So he's lowering interest rates in an inflationary environment. People are wondering, what's the big deal about that? Well, inflation means you have too much money chasing too few goods. That's its simplest explanation. And when you lower interest rates, it makes it easy to get more money in the economy. Because if you get a loan at a low interest rate, you can spend that money and not have a great worry about paying it back, especially if you have high inflation that's way below the interest rate. So people are making loans out there, getting loans, and spending it, knowing that the inflation is going to be so high that their return payment will be a lot less valuable than what they got from the original loan. I know that seems complicated. It's really not. If there's a lot more money easily available, it means prices go up because you got a lot of money. You can pay more for stuff. It doesn't mean the thing is more valuable. It just means the money's less valuable. That's what's happening over there. And what they're trying to do in Russia is convince the citizens of Russia that the money is still valuable by raising the interest rates to say, hey, if you're going to take a loan, it's going to cost you. This money is valuable. And that's really what you do to head off inflation, convince people that their money is valuable. Turkey is trying the opposite. Please don't let inflation get out of hand while we convince you that the money's not that valuable. That's really that. So there's a section of Eastern Europe heading over into Northern Asia that is just teetering right now. Lots of financial issues, and the inflation is one of the underlying things. Russia is having a lot of problems. Its space program is falling apart. The Roscosmos for the last 3 years have every year launched less than half of what they announced they would do at the beginning of the year to space. And this is like their flagship show the world how great we are program, as opposed to the other stuff that the rest of the world doesn't know about. If that flagship program, the propaganda leader, the space leader, is falling apart, it says a lot about what's happening in the not so front and center areas of the Russian economy. China's having difficulties, the most difficulties it's had in decades and decades and decades in its economy, and not from inflation, from lack of work. They keep shutting down. So when you look at what's happening in the United States, our economy is absolutely booming. We've got a 40-year record in our employment of low number of layoffs. That's been 2 weeks in a row now where we've got 40-year record of low layoffs, but quit rate is high because people know they can get a new job. You've been waiting for a while, so I'm going to let you.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about inflation. I think one of the things that we tend to do in the United States is blame everything that happens on something the government did.
Right.
But and indeed, we had stimulus programs.
Please don't take that away from me.
I'm going to take it away from
you. I want to blame the government, please.
And since there's a Democrat in the White House, we blame the last of the three stimulus bills for all the inflation, which, by the way, doesn't make any sense.
But while Trump was in there, we would blame him. So it's at least we're equal opportunity blamers.
Right. We didn't get the inflation while Trump was in office, so we don't blame him.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's right. Right. It didn't have to do with them. It isn't Trump's fault. It isn't Biden's
fault. And it isn't Biden's fault, and it isn't the Congress's fault. But let me explain. Yes, we're having inflation, but Russia, for example, is having 8.1% inflation right now.
And guess what? Biden's not president there. I know that's a surprise.
United Kingdom is having 5.1% year-over-year inflation.
Now, they elected Biden, though, didn't they? Oh, no. Sorry. No, they didn't.
The way the United Kingdom measures inflation is very much like our PCE index, not like our CPI. And so ours is 4.6, by the way, year over year, using the PCE index. And theirs is 5.1. So we're having roughly the same amount of inflation in the United Kingdom as we're having in the United States. And the United Kingdom obviously did not benefit from any of the bills that were passed in the United States giving money to people. So the point is,
inflation is going. We could make a conspiracy theory if you'd like.
Oh, come on.
We could do it. Go ahead.
Inflation is going on in a lot of countries. It's cranking up in Australia. It's cranking up in a lot of places. They actually have inflation problems in China right now. And the point I wanted to make is this is going on all over. So when we look for a cause for something and you say the cause is what was done in the United States and that's why our inflation is so high, but you look at places where that didn't have any effect and it didn't happen and the inflation is high there too, you say, no, maybe that's not the cause. The cause of the inflation we're having right now is one thing. We're having a COVID-19 pandemic, and it is screwing up supply chains and supply connections. And a big piece of that is because China has adopted the opposite strategy for dealing with it from the United States. China has adopted the strategy of if there's any COVID shows up anywhere, they shut everything down. And when they do, it cuts off supply from the United States. Compound that with the fact that in the United States, we've had enough COVID and enough shutdown, not government shutdowns, but people being sick, that our transportation has collapsed. And throw in the third element, which is the fact that people shifted their spending violently. And when they shifted their spending violently, they went over to buying things that there was a shortage of supply of and stopped buying things that there wasn't a shortage of supply on. And as a result, if you actually look at the numbers, and Jake and I were talking about this before the show started, if you actually look at the inflation numbers, there are things out there that have fallen in price during this inflationary period. And they're the things that people basically stopped buying because they were not traveling, not going around and doing things as much. What was it? Girls' clothing fell?
Yeah. And this is one of those things when we're looking at, at categories of what's up, what's down, kind of across the board. We can see things like this is great. This is a fantastic thing. There's two categories. We talked about this before the program started. Two areas in our economy that have been in the near double-digit inflation multiple times over the last 10 years that have been way above a 5% inflation consistently on average for a huge amount of time. And that's education, post-college or post-secondary education. You go to college, and we've had a college inflation rate on average of around 7% over the last 20 years. And medical care. Everybody knows that's been getting more and more and more and more expensive. Well, guess what? Over the last year, those two areas are the lowest inflation of the big areas that are tracked for consumer price index. So education is only up about 1.7%. Medical care is only up about 1.7%. We actually, when renewing the business health insurance, we do a big sweep of prices looking around at different competitors to see what's available. And we were charged less this year than we were last year. And we were like, well, maybe it's because we had we had babies born. We have a whole series of things happened that would normally cause those prices to be higher, and they were lower. Well, at the same time, energy and transportation are up mega double digits. So, yeah, and you were talking about apparel. So when we look at retail purchases, boys' apparel is up 8.4% year over year. That's a pretty strong inflation. If you're trying to buy a boy's shirt, you might want to buy a girl's shirt instead, because girls' apparel is down 0.4%. That's deflation. Well, at 0.4%, we're talking about almost exactly the same price. So why are boys more? Well, it's because it's not uniform. It's not across the board. It takes time to get shipments from different places. This inflation isn't because we have lots of money. It's partly because we have lots of money. But here's an example of a place that has lots of money that isn't experiencing inflation right now, Japan. They've had a series of stimulus bills. The last one was finished up and started to be paying out in November. And it amounts to a 10% of GDP stimulus. A 10% of GDP is going out to the economy, and they're having near deflation.
Where is that?
In Japan.
Yeah.
So,
although they're slowing it down now.
Right. So this is the concept, is that they were fighting deflation. So why is that? And it keeps coming back to one word, confidence. When people are scared, they fall back on how confident they are that a price is going to be steady. And when you have kind of import limitations, Japan has a lot of those, the prices are a lot more structurally stable. So people have more faith that they're going to stay structurally stable. We in the United States are on a system that, you know, you can look at 12 different places to buy the same boys' apparel, or you could just buy it from one place. So we have competition, but that very competition, the speed at which the price changes, gives us less confidence than they do when the price doesn't change at all. I mean, if we have one of the big things in retail over the last several years, or, you know, Prime Day or second Black Fridays and these sales that pop up that are designed to tell us that prices can fluctuate, it gives us less confidence, which means we're more afraid that prices are going to go up faster. And I know this is all psychology, but that's how inflation works. If we all believe that there's a problem, there becomes a problem. That's true with whether it's a run on toilet paper. And man, those jokes never get old. Just toilet paper runs. Just got it.
This
is an economic trope that will hang around for the rest of my life for sure. But we got to play some commercials. We've been banging on inflation and the psychology behind it and belief and all that good stuff. But that's all money is belief. It is true whether you're talking chickens bartered for cows, you have to believe that the chickens are worth as much as the cow. It's all belief. So just keep that in mind. It makes it a lot easier to not understand, but at least you can not understand with some confidence. But we've got to play some commercials.
not understand with some confidence.
None of us really understand why people are confident about things.
Don't tell them that.
Oh, yeah, we're experts. We're supposed to say, well, yes, secretly, we all understand this. No, we don't.
But we need to do some commercials.
Yeah, we got to play some commercials. We'll be back on the other side. If you'd like to join the conversation, the email addresses in here are jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. That's Tango, Papa, Whiskey Charlie, or The Personal Wealth Coach. And we'll be back on the other side of these very important announcements. And we're back with more of The Personal Wealth Coach. This is Jake, and you are?
Jeff, I think.
We're both McClures. We're also bald. Fair warning out there. That's full disclosure. We are bald. Yes?
I think so.
I wanted to hit one more thing on turkey before we move on. I mean, it's the holiday season, and turkey should be part of our conversation. It's generally part of the political discourse or discord at the Thanksgiving and Christmas table, turkeys. This is the country of Turkey, though. And when we're talking about what's happening there and Turkey really being in trouble, and we're saying it kind of calm-voiced and acting like, you know, it's part of day-to-day, Turkey's in real, real trouble. This week alone, on one day, the lira dropped 8% against the dollar. Their stock market, the BIST 100 index, that's kind of what we use to track them, fell 5% on that same day. Year over year, it looks good. When we look at Turkey's stock market, it's up 40% year to date. But there's a problem in that if you were buying with U.S. dollars, that 40% gain actually becomes a 35% loss. That's what we mean when we're talking about high inflation in Turkey right now. It's bad. It is really, really, really bad. Those of you that have been listening for years as opposed to just picked us up in the pandemic know that back in 2019, we brought up a relatively serious but extremely obscure problem in our repo market. It sounds like I just changed the subject. I haven't. A repo is when you're a big institution and you need some cash so that you can make payroll, but you're going to get paid tomorrow or something along those lines. If you have a bunch of treasury securities that you're just sitting on, you know, bonds or stock or bills or notes from the U.S. Treasury, they're sitting there and they're pretty safe. A repo is when you say, hey, can you hold this for me? It's kind of like a pawn broker. You go into the pawn shop, only the pawn broker is actually, generally speaking, pretty fair because they know that they can sell that thing that you're offering as collateral for that quick loan immediately at almost as much as what they paid you. So they charge an interest. And we had some problems with that in that there weren't enough people in that market in the United States, and the Federal Reserve had to step in. Well, in Turkey, their repos, and again, this is if you have $100,000 in U.S. treasuries and you need $100,000 in cash, but only for a short period of time, you can say, here, hold on to this, give me the money for it, and I'll pay you back tomorrow and I'll get my securities back. It's just a quick swap, and that's really what they're called. Repo swaps, where I'm going to repossess it tomorrow. I'm giving you this today. You give me some cash today. Tomorrow, I'll give you the cash back and you give me this back. And it's a way for big institutions that are a little short on money for one day to get it quick without having to pay a lot for it. It's part of the money market. It's why you can make deposits and withdrawals from money market securities quickly. Okay. All of that trading in Turkish government debt was suspended multiple times during the week this week because people are valuing those treasuries at much lower than they should be. The cash is coming up so fast that the interest rate that they're charging on this at a personal level, like one transaction at a time, is really, really high at the same time that the central bank is trying to lower interest rates. So while this sounds really obscure, what it means is that nobody in Turkey really has faith in what their government is doing with the money. That's bad because they have a lot of Syrian refugees. And if they become more of a failed state in the middle of this, Europe's going to have issues. Belarus, by the way, is having similar issues to Russia, only they're cracking down harder on political dissidents. They've just arrested the husband of the lady that was running, or sentenced the husband of the lady that was running against the current president, who, according to the current president, lost, and according to a lot of the international community, the current president lost. All of that stuff is going on in that part of the world. This is a normal kind of instability that comes up historically around plagues. Fluctuations in currency value, countries turning much, much more authoritarian in an emergency setting, economies collapsing. This is all part of history, and it's happening again. So from an economic perspective, the reason why we can be relatively calm talking about the lira dropping is we've read about this so many times in the past, read and studied about this is what happens in these scenarios. It's still heart-wrenching to see it happening because Turkey was becoming a cultural and economic powerhouse. It was becoming a true partner in trade with a lot of countries before it turned around and started back the other direction. I don't know. It's kind of like watching somebody fall off the wagon when they're in Al-Anon or something. It's just like, oh, no, don't, no. We had this feeling about Greece a few years back over the Grexit of, oh, no, we thought you'd gotten better. You're not better, are you? And that's what we're saying about Turkey right now. So I realize the question was about Russia, but it's all tied together, and Turkey's actually a bigger and better example of the badness that's going on. And as far as their economies are concerned, they're pretty similar in scope. Turkey rose to it, while Russia has dropped to it as far as size of economies. All right, yep. There. That's my soapbox, and I'll step back. Got a few minutes left this hour.
We're not helping Russia a lot. We've got a lot of sanctions against them, and one of the reasons, this is one of those things that leads to war if it's not carefully managed. One of the reasons that Russia is warmongering, they've moved 70,000 troops to the border of Ukraine, and there is some serious concern that they're going to invade Ukraine. By the way, a speech made by President Putin in Russia recently indicated that he talked how he sees Russian history. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
He saw the collapse of the Soviet Union as being the disintegration of traditional historic Russia, because in his mind, Ukraine and Belarus and the other areas in Eastern Europe are properly part of Russia. I mean, Crimea is historically part of Russia, and the eastern part of Ukraine is part of Russia. But that's number one. Number two is, in the midst of this high inflation that they're having, which means things are getting more expensive and people on fixed income are not able to do well.
And there's a lot of people on fixed income.
There's a lot of unhappy people in Russia, but if you can beat the drum and say the United States and NATO are about to attack us and we are going to defend ourselves and then get a war started, and you have control of the media, which he does pretty thoroughly, and you've convinced that they're defending their nation against the United States and against NATO, which is a purely fictitious issue. We have no desire to invade Russia. Then he can keep his popularity up. And the point is, he wants to keep it on that edge, but if something, this is where things happen that nobody likes. And that is that if a war actually starts on the edge of Ukraine and he starts to invade Ukraine and we take severe action against him, he may be forced to keep this fiction going and keep on invading until we do get into a shooting war. And the moment he thinks that we won't get into a shooting war is when he'll start one. And China is operating very much the same way. It's a little scary in the world right now, and it reminds me a lot of my readings in the 1930s. However, we only have about a minute and a half left in this hour before next hour. So right. We probably ought to do our end of hour stuff at this point.
Right. If you would like to talk to us off the air, we do have a pretty good picture of what's happening culturally and economically, politically across the globe, though that generally doesn't come into contact with portfolios that much. Some, but not so much. We do give fiduciary investment advice to people of high net worth or the others that meet our qualifying standards. And if you'd like to talk to us off the air, we have voicemail waiting locally at
254-947-1111.
Or you can reach that line toll-free, presuming you still have a landline, at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our website, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can sign up for our newsletter there. We do a weekly Friday newsletter. You can listen to the radio program going back lots of time. Contact us through the contact form or through email, Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com. Or you can go just about anywhere that podcasts are offered and look up TPWC or The Personal Wealth Coach and you will find us. We are out there on the pod world. We are pod people. Until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.